Hi, and welcome to the Psychology Sisters podcast.
Just two besties on a quest to normalise the dialogue around mental health. I'm Kat, a registered psychologist.
And I'm Amy, a registered psychotherapist. In our episodes, we combine our skills, professional and personal experiences with a light sprinkling of science and a dabble of fun to help you to become informed, in control and empowered.
Now let's dive deep into today's episode. Just a warning, this episode discusses suicide. If this is a trigger for you in any way, we strongly suggest that you skip this episode. Hello everybody, welcome back to another episode. Today we are talking about a pretty serious topic that Amy and I have been wanting to speak about for a while. And we are talking about suicide. So we are talking about what causes suicide, talking about who it can happen to, and we're talking about how to have the conversation with someone who might be feeling suicidal, how to ask someone, and if you are someone who is feeling suicidal, then we have some ideas and some ways that we can support you as well. So this is something that we, Amy and I, have both experienced professionally with suicidal clients. I also have had some friends who have been through some pretty dark stuff with suicide and depression. And I feel like it's a conversation that, yes, it's getting a lot more media attention and a lot more, you know, Are You Okay Day and Suicide Awareness Day, but I feel like it's still, I guess, a little bit untouched. It's still, people know suicide, but I guess the exploration into it is still a little bit taboo.
Or it might just be that there's some uncomfortability around asking about suicide or speaking about suicide. Or there might be, I know there are some myths around, you know, whether bringing up suicide with someone will put the idea in their head. So we wanted to have a really honest, open conversation about suicide to kind of, yeah, dispel some myths and give you some facts and helpful tips and ideas on how you can either support someone who is suicidal or get some help for yourself if you have suicidal ideation.
Yeah. So just before we start, when we say suicidal ideation, that means suicidal thoughts pretty much. And during this, you'll probably notice that we will not say commit suicide because that has actually been advised against because commit makes it sound like it's a crime. So we don't say commit suicide anymore. We might say take their own life or suicide. Coming off the back of Mental Health Awareness Week last week, probably by the time this goes on Spotify and iTunes, it might be a few weeks ago, we thought this was such an important conversation to have. And we have had a few questions from you guys asking about suicide or how to help a mate who might be feeling suicidal or having those suicidal thoughts.
Yeah, and I think it's just so important to be aware of or to have that information and understanding because every year over 65,000 Australians make a suicide attempt. Every year, suicide is the leading cause of death for Australians between 15 to 44 years of age. And every year, young Australians are more likely to take their own life than die in a motor vehicle accident.
It's also three times more higher risk in males than it is for females. However, I was looking at some stats yesterday and over the past decade, there has been actually an increase in suicide death by females as well.
Around 20%.
Yeah.
In Australia.
I think that I was looking at some statistics yesterday as well, and they said that from 2018, there was actually a 9% increase in suicides than the year before. So that's like really prevalent information and significant to know because it's actually the rate of suicide is increasing. And it's really
alarming.
I think what I find really ridiculous about suicide is it's not brought up in the media. When someone takes their own life, it's not brought up as a suicide. It's always, you know, as something else. I know that I had a friend a couple of years ago and their cousin, they took their own life and nothing in the news about it. It was a really horrific time. Nobody even spoke about it. Whereas if it was a car accident, it would be all over the news. So there's this real taboo in the media about suicide, which I think makes it such a secret or
I think it makes it uncomfortable, don't you think? I think the more we talk about it, the more comfortable we get speaking about it. Do you know what I mean? So the less we talk about it, the more scary it seems to touch or the more uncomfortable it seems to touch.
Absolutely.
Whereas when we get into the habit of using, you know, the appropriate language around suicide and speaking about it openly, it becomes more natural and more comfortable to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And think about it, with any mental illness, there was a time when it was uncomfortable to talk about. I'm sure 15, 20 years ago, anxiety was really uncomfortable to talk about. So hopefully there's progression in the, you know, the social stigma of suicide, that it continues to be noted and you know, it continues to be spoken about, because the more it is spoken about, the more that people maybe feel more comfortable and less embarrassed to reach out for help.
Definitely.
It's not stigma or a taboo anymore.
And we know that many people who die by suicide have experienced a mental illness. Often people who are considering suicide are dealing with a combination of mental health and difficult life events. So it's really important that we do talk about it more.
Yeah. So as Amy said, one of the highest predictors of suicide attempts really does come back to a mental illness or a psychiatric diagnosis. So, for example, people who might have an anxiety disorder, an affective disorder, so that's depression, bipolar, or substance abuse disorders, they're at a really high risk of suicide attempts and wanting to take their own life.
And research shows that 90% of people who die by suicide are suffering from a mental illness at that time.
So other factors that can influence suicide and why people might attempt suicide and wanting to take their own life can be a family history of suicide or a family history of mental illness. It can be caused from issues from childhood, such as physical or sexual abuse, or even in adulthood as well. I have seen, especially with my clients, it could be following a really traumatic event, such as a relationship breakdown, a job loss, financial difficulty, loss of a loved one. It can also be from things such as lack of social support and social isolation. That's why there's quite a high statistic of farmers and people who live in rural areas who do take their own life, because out there there is a lot less support. It's a lot more isolated too.
People might choose to take their own life if they feel like they're a burden on others or to others, to their family and friends, if they're suffering, you know, from a physical illness, or if that's, you know, part of a mental illness as well. It could be that they are abusing drugs and alcohol, like marijuana, heroin, amphetamines, closely related to suicidal ideation.
There is other reasons, like access to ways or means of harming oneself. So
self-harm, I think, is important to briefly touch on too, because they are different. Suicidal ideation and self-harm are two different things. So self-harm means any behavior which involves the deliberate causing of pain or injury to the self. And it's self-harm is usually a response to distress, and that could be associated with mental illness or trauma or like a distressing event. In the short term, some people will find that it provides temporary relief from the psychological distress they are experiencing, while people who self-harm do not necessarily mean to kill themselves or want to kill themselves. So I think that's the important distinction. There often does become very dangerous and requires professional help.
Well, even people who do attempt to suicide, a lot of them actually don't want to take their own life. And that sounds really counterintuitive, but it's more a reach out for help, or it's more, I've noticed when working with these clients, it's an escapism.
Yeah.
A lot of clients I work with, I ask them this question. I said, is it that you want to die, or is it that you just can't live with what's going on? And 99% of them will say, I just can't live with what's going on. It's an escapism. It's, I can't deal with this. So it's not actually that they want to take their own life. It's just reaching out for help.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. Any clinical work I've done with someone who presents with suicidal ideation, it really is a desperate attempt to escape an unbearable suffering that they have. And suicide attempt is an indication that something is gravely wrong in a person's life and they just really need some extra support.
Or they feel like they've run out of options. It's like they've tried to help themselves, they've tried to get out of this situation, but they just can't. And for them, this is the only option that they have. They can't live with what's going on. So a few other reasons people might want to attempt suicide can be, as I was saying before, access to ways of harming oneself. So there is quite a large statistic of suicides among doctors and dentists, because they have access to medication or anything, and they have the knowledge to know what medication will take their own life. So there's also another reason might be if you're someone who is unsure of your sexual orientation, whether you're heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, transsexual, then that's another reason why people might take their own life, because it's like, it's almost an identity crisis, or it's
or it might go against your religious, spiritual beliefs. Your
family might not
accept you,
which can lead to social isolation as well. Another reason might be, as Amy was saying, physical illness. If you have a long-term physical illness or a chronic physical illness, that can certainly correlate to mental illness and wanting to just escape.
Family disruptions.
Yeah, so that's divorce.
Or problems with the law. Like I know of people who have come into really stressful, distressing situations where they felt like they had no hope, there was no way out. And it was a combination of lots of different things. It was financial, they would run into trouble with the law, and it was family as well. Like, how would their family handle that news and that kind of thing? So we can start to see that risk factors are really complex for suicide.
And there's a large undertone with all of these risk factors of feeling trapped and feeling alone.
Or hopeless.
Feeling hopeless and helpless. And I think that really is the undercurrent of suicidal ideation, is just not knowing where to go or what to do. And maybe the logical thing for that person is just to take their own life, just to get rid of that feeling.
Escape it. So one of the things that I really wanted to touch on is that when people say, oh, they attempted suicide for attention, suicide attempts are not a cry for attention. They are a cry for help. And that's what Kat and I are talking about, is that people start to think they have no hope and they feel helpless. So they think the only escape or way out is to take their own life. So if someone cries out for help, it is really about getting them access to help. And it really is a sign of just how much they're suffering. Unfortunately, these cries for help sometimes do prove to be fatal.
And is that a risk you want to take? If you have a friend or someone that you know and you think, oh, well, they're just doing it for attention, is the risk of ignoring that a risk that you're willing to take and live with that maybe guilt or shame that maybe you didn't reach out for help for them? I think we had a really interesting question from a listener quite a while ago asking our thoughts on mental health, using mental health as a attention-seeking strategy. And I guess our stance on that is, well, if it's anything attention-seeking, then obviously they're crying out for help.
Yeah, definitely. And that cry for help really needs attention.
Attention.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
There's a reason that they've chosen to talk about suicide and think about suicide, because that's where they're at in their life. They're feeling so lost that they want to take their own life. And that's a huge cry for help.
And that's something that shouldn't ever be ignored. Absolutely. As attention-seeking behavior.
Yeah.
So by contrast to the risk factors, I just wanted to give a few little points on things that can make us more resilient and reduce suicidal ideation. So like Kat said, sometimes people have thoughts of suicide when they're socially isolated. So giving someone supportive social relationships allows them, you know, it can be a real healing component, a sense of control. Sometimes people feel suicidal when they feel like they have no control over their life or their situation, a sense of purpose. Sometimes people can feel really overwhelmed and depressed to the point of suicidal ideation when they don't have a sense of purpose. Family harmony. Family can be a really big thing when it comes to our mental health. Effective help seeking. That's a huge one. So knowing how to get the right help for your situation.
And sometimes talking to friends is not enough. You can't rely on your friends to be able to help you, because your friends don't know. Sometimes with suicide or self-harm, they don't know, or any mental illness. Friends aren't qualified. They can probably try their best, and it's great you're reaching out, but sometimes you do need to go to a professional for this stuff.
Yeah, exactly right. And positive connections to good health services available as well is one of the things that can be like real protective factors for suicide.
There was a 2018 study that found a really strong predictor of suicide and mental health was major depressive disorder. So that's people who have long-term depression. Another one was insomnia, so people who can't sleep. That is so logical. That makes sense. I mean, of course, if you can't sleep, that would be such a frustrating feeling. And socioeconomic status issues. So if you're someone who has less support or less financial stability, then that's a really huge predict and significant predictor between your situation and suicide attempts as well.
Yeah, financial stress can be a real burden.
Yeah, absolutely. So what if you are someone who maybe has a friend or someone that you know and you kind of, you're not sure how they're feeling, they don't open up, or you kind of, maybe there's something about them you think, oh, I'm not sure if they're okay. What are the warning signs? What are some of the warning signs that maybe you could look out for this person? And please know that this is not just friends. This can be family members, colleagues at work. This can be people that you don't have much to do with, but you can just notice something's not right with them, or you feel like there's just something different about them. Then please, please be so vigilant to this stuff. So I guess one of the first sets of red flags is how they feel and talk. So for example, if you notice that person feeling sad, angry, ashamed, rejected, desperate, lonely, overly happy — that sounds really counterproductive, but it's true — or exhausted, the reason that overly happy people can be a sign of suicide, it's really interesting, is because if you have someone who's been quite depressed or trapped in a situation they feel like they can't get out of, and they decide that they want to end their life, that comes with a sense of relief. And so people who might be feeling really low and then instantly happy and relieved can be a huge red flag. As clinicians, we're taught, watch out if there's a huge change in mood that's not normal or not caused by anything else, because that could be a huge predictor of people wanting to end their life. Another few red flags might be they say things like they feel trapped or helpless. So they might say, I can't see any way out of this. They feel lonely. So they might say, I'm on my own. No one cares about me. No one would even notice if I'm gone. Or they feel guilty. It's my fault. I'm to blame. I shouldn't be here. I'm such a burden.
Definitely. So if you think there's a high risk of a person attempting suicide before they can get appropriate professional help, and you do start to recognize some of these clues or warning signs, then don't leave them alone unless you know, are concerned for your own safety. And it's important that you either take them to hospital for a mental health check, or dial 000 if you're really worried. Some things that you can look out for in their behavior, like Kat mentioned, looking out for some signs on how they're feeling or maybe what they're saying to you. But if you notice that they start to maybe increase their alcohol consumption, so things like drinking more than what they usually would, or abusing drugs more than usual, that can be a warning sign in behavior. Withdrawing from friends and family and social events, that can be a warning sign. Appearing really anxious or agitated. Having trouble sleeping. As Kat mentioned, insomnia is a leading cause of suicide. So if you notice that they're having trouble sleeping, or if they're sleeping all the time, that can be another warning sign. Like Kat mentioned, having sudden mood swings. So they seem really happy for one period, and then all of a sudden they seem really sad and depressed. Can indicate that they might have made a decision to attempt suicide. Having episodes of sudden rage, aggression, and anger, acting recklessly, and engaging in risky activities can be another kind of behavioral warning sign. Or there's the flip side of that, which is completely losing interest in their appearance. You know, you might notice if there are someone who has always taken a lot of pride in how they put themselves together, like wearing makeup, you know, doing their hair, putting together nice outfits. If you notice that suddenly they're not wearing makeup and they're not putting as much effort into how they normally would, then that can be another warning sign.
Or even not washing.
Like, yeah,
the basic hygiene. Self-care, the basic self-hygiene. If you notice that they're not wanting to put effort in, because those people have thought, okay, well, what's the point? I'm going to end my life anyway. So what is the point of dressing up and looking nice when this is all going to be over soon?
Yeah. And then there's like the real obvious behavioral signs, which are putting your affairs in order and even making funeral arrangements. Or
and writing a will.
Yeah, writing a will.
Another one that we're told to look out for is if people start to give away their possessions as well. Yeah. So if you notice someone who might be giving away, giving you lots of gifts, you say, oh, yep, take anything you need. They might even say that they're moving, which might be a justification why they're giving all their things away. Then these are red flags to look out for with people.
Definitely. And like Kat mentioned, males have a higher statistical number of suicide, how like the completion of suicide is higher for men, statistically speaking. However, women attempt suicide about 2 or 3 times as often as men. So it's important that pay attention to these warning signs for both genders.
Yeah, of course. So what are the high risk warning signs? So the high risk warning signs that you could look out for, which are the ones that need immediate intervention, is if that person says, if they threaten to hurt or kill themselves, if they have the ways to kill themselves, such as tablets, or they have equipment, such as a rope that they could use to harm themselves, if they talk about it, if they draw about it, or they write about death, dying, or suicide, then these are your absolutely high risk warning signs that need immediate intervention.
Talking about feeling hopeless or helpless.
Yeah. Yeah, anything like that, then that's when you're, you know, you should be really, really worried about this person. At this time, I would recommend that you start to have a conversation with them. I think it's really important to let them know how worried you are about them. So it is really, if you're kind of someone thinking, oh, yeah, I think I know someone who might be kind of showing these, but I'm not really sure, rule of thumb, ask them anyway. I think it's really important to be safe than sorry.
It can be really frightening and distressing when someone you care about wants to harm themselves, or when you see someone you care about be in a really low state like this, or a really distressing state like this. But it's important you remember you don't need to be a clinician, you don't need to be a doctor. If you're worried about risk of someone's life, and the person that you care about seems to be really struggling, reaching out and connecting with them could potentially save their life.
Absolutely. And please note that any warning signs that you pick up on is usually them crying out for help, and that's them wanting you to ask them. A lot of people who, when I ask this question, it's relief. It's like, yes, I have been feeling like this. It's almost like, why did it take you so long to ask me?
It's like, thank God. Yeah.
Someone asked me. So these little things that they're doing, if they didn't want you to see, they didn't want you to ask, they didn't want you to get worried, they wouldn't be showing you any of this. So those little tiny warning signs, they're asking you in their, you know, nonverbal way that for you
they need to help.
Check, that they need help, check on them. So I think a few tips before we go into about how to have the conversation. It is so important to not be judgmental. As much as this person you might think, well, what do you got to worry about? Or what's, you know, it's not that bad. The more judgmental you are, even your facial expressions, the less likely they are to open up. Okay, so be totally non-judgmental, be empathetic. And also another tip we would have is say the word suicide.
Yeah.
Do not skirt around it. Do not skirt around it. Do not say, oh, is it that you want to you know, maybe take your life. Like if you say it like that, that person will start to think that suicide is wrong and it's taboo. Like we said in the very beginning, you need to say the word and say it with conviction. So this can perpetuate or feed into their feelings that it's shameful or that they should feel guilty for wanting to end their life. Go into this conversation understanding that it's okay for people to feel suicidal and it's unfortunately quite normal. Obviously, something has made them feel like this. So please approach them with nothing but empathy, kindness, and a non-judgmental tone and facial expression, because obviously there's something going on for them and they're needing help.
And you might be the only person to ask that question.
Exactly.
And that's what they really need.
Exactly. I think it's just risk versus, is that a risk that you want to take? Is just think, oh no, I think they're okay. Like they went to work, so they must be fine. No, you need to ask the question if there's even an inkling of, you know, anything. When Amy and I think as practitioners, we're kind of taught, ask them anyway. And even if they say no, at least you've asked. Okay. It's not going to ruin anything if you ask them. Okay. So I guess our first tip for having the conversation with someone, talk about your observations. So, for example, hey, I've noticed you've been really withdrawn lately and you haven't come out with us in a while. Is everything okay? Or, hey, I've noticed that you haven't been taking your pills or you've stashed a fair few pills away. What's going on? Is everything okay? Or, hey, I know someone in your situation who has gone through heartbreak or a job loss or losing a family member might experience feelings of suicide. Is that kind of how you've been feeling lately? So the last one is a really good one if you're someone who's not sure how to confront that person directly.
Mm.
Saying something like, hey, someone in your situation would probably be feeling suicidal or they feel like they want to escape. Is that kind of how you're feeling?
Mm.
That takes away kind of the confrontation of it.
And it also shows them that you're understanding of their situation.
And it's normal to feel like how they're feeling.
It's normalizing and validating.
It's not, it's not something to feel guilty or shameful about.
One practical thing I'd advise as well is choose a time and a place that's appropriate to have this conversation. Obviously, you know, you're not going to ask them directly if they're having thoughts of suicide at a coffee shop or, you know, choose somewhere that's where you have time to sit down and talk openly and don't expect to have this conversation quickly.
Mm.
So don't think, oh, I've got 5 minutes. I know. I'll quickly ask them now and then I'll duck off and do what I've got to do. This is a conversation that probably will take some time and your loved one needs your undivided attention at this time. Absolutely. So I would say time and place is really important for this conversation as well.
Feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So it might even be their own house.
Mm.
It might be somewhere that's out of the public. So maybe at your house, somewhere that you can both go for a walk, something like that.
Or even in the car. Mm. I always recommend going for a long drive. You're sitting side by side, which is a great tactic. You can take some of the, I guess, confrontational feel out of the conversation if you are with someone who may not open up easily, but still, you know, you've noticed some warning signs that they might really need someone to talk to and some help. And then even if they do say that they're thinking about suicide, well, you might say something like, why don't we drive to help together now?
Let's go to the hospital now.
Yeah.
Let's go to your doctor.
Now, yeah.
Okay, so kind of as we said before, another tip, even if they don't mention suicide, but maybe their behavior says otherwise, and you have reason enough to suspect this, please ask them anyway. As Amy said before, asking someone does not put the idea into their head and it does not encourage it more. If anything, most people who are suicidal will respond with relief if you ask them. So from then, two things will happen. They will say no. When we have clients that are like, no, like, what are you talking about? I'm fine. It's okay. Like, we can deal with it. Obviously, you still need to look after that person if there's cause for concern. But if they say yes, so what happens if they say yes, then this is when you start to need to kind of go into,
have they made a plan?
Emergency mode. So this is where you need to be really honest and upfront with them. So what if they say yes? Okay. So you're feeling like you want to end your life, you want to suicide. When are you planning on doing so? I know this sounds really weird to ask.
Or have you thought about how you would kill yourself?
Yeah. So timeline and means. So when and how. Those are the two most important things that you need to know straight away. And even if they start to think, if they start to maybe get embarrassed, you say, I need you to be really honest with me because I really care about you. When were you thinking of taking your life and how were you planning on doing so?
And then you can ask if they have the means to carry out their plan.
Yeah. So if their answer is imminent, so for example, I'm actually thinking about it tonight, tomorrow morning, in the next week, you need to call 000 immediately and stay with them until help arrives.
And one thing too is they may beg you to not tell anyone, but never agree to keep their suicidal thoughts or plans a secret and don't assume that they will seek help on their own. And that's why Kat says you need to call 000 immediately.
And I think also people start to downplay their feelings as soon as they admit it. So I've had lots of clients who are like, yes, I am suicidal, but it's fine. Like, it's all good. It'll be better tomorrow. Don't ignore that, because what's happening for them is they're feeling embarrassed. They feel like they've said too much. And now they know that their kind of feeling is out there and their thoughts are out there and they want to take it back.
Or they might really want to kill themselves and now you're saying
you're stopping that.
You're stopping. Yeah. And that's a real trigger as well.
Yeah. And even if they don't like it and they beg you not to, is that a risk that you want to take? It's much better to have them angry at you and frustrated and maybe lose a friendship or lose whatever it is, a relationship with them. But it means they're alive. As much as that sucks, I know with clients, I've lost rapport with clients, I've lost trust with clients, but it's meant that they've stayed alive. And to me, that's imperative. That's the most important thing.
Same. I've lost rapport with parents of clients over suicidal or high risk suicide.
But that is that doesn't, that's not your first priority. Your first priority with a suicide safety friend always. Is their safety, 100%. So if possible, it would be really helpful. Also, when you call the ambulance, they treat this as a high priority too. Mm. If you're still kind of unsure of what to do and you're feeling a bit stuck, this is a really good time also, if you still want some extra support from someone else, is to call Lifeline.
Mm.
They can stay with you on the phone until help arrives, and they can tell you kind of what to say to the person. You can put that person on the phone to Lifeline and they can talk it out with them. But you don't have to, but that's just another way to support your friend or whoever it is, the suicidal person.
Like Kat said, they can help talk you through what to say to that person and provide you with support, because this is a very distressing and stressful situation for you to be in as well, and you want to make sure that you also have adequate support. So Lifeline's number is 13 11 14. It's a really easy number to memorize, and if you are thinking maybe this is a conversation you need to have with someone, might be important to jot that down.
Absolutely. So if possible, say for example you're not going to call Lifeline but you've got help on the way, you've got the ambulance coming, you can dismantle their plan. So, for example, if you know that they keep their pills in their bathroom, you can ask them if you can take them with you, or you can throw them out.
Yeah.
If they have a rope that's hanging in the garage, you can ask them if you can take that with you.
Mm.
So even though they're going to hospital and they're going to be looked after, you're still making it safe for them when they come home.
Yeah. You want to make sure that their means or their plans of suicide, we've eliminated any risk.
Yeah. So stay with them until help arrives. You have the choice to go with them. Please know you don't have to. If this is, it's quite, as Amy was saying, quite a emotional time, and it's quite draining on you. Usually the ambulance and the paramedics will call their family, but if you know, if you have their number, you can also do that for yourself. So they've got other support, so they're not depending just on you. As Amy was saying, I think the most important thing when dealing with someone with suicide is A, their safety, and B, how you look after yourself after it's all kind of gone and done. You need to debrief. You need to talk to your support networks. You have a counsellor you could talk to, even your doctor, family, anyone. It's really important that you look after yourself and not hold this in, because that can
That's paramount.
It's so, I guess, what's the word? I know when I have clients who are suicidal, I drive home and I'm like, whoa, I do need to talk to someone about it. It's so
heavy.
Important.
It's heavy work for us as professional clinicians who deal with mental health day to day. So for someone that maybe has never encountered this or doesn't have the professional support like we do, this is really heavy stuff.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's paramount that you practice self-care and get support, and don't, like Kat said, don't hold this to yourself. Make sure that you're looking after yourself as well.
Yeah, you can even call Lifeline as well, as someone who is a second, you know, person who's secondary to someone's suicide. I know when we used to work at Lifeline, you'd get so many calls from people who are supporting someone who is suicidal, and they just really wanted someone to talk to. It was also validation that they did the right thing.
Yeah, of course.
So that might be a first question that pops up after that person goes to hospital, is like, did I do everything right? Like, could I have done something better? You might even have questions of, how did I not see this sooner? Or what could I have done differently? But please, please, please don't beat yourself up. I think just asking the question, you've done enough, you've helped them. It's so hard. Sometimes people will try and hide this as much as they can. So it's really hard to read minds.
And you just, like I said, you just being there, listening to them, asking them the question, giving them that room to talk about what's going on for them and getting them the help is the most you can do.
Yeah. So on the flip side, if you are someone who is feeling suicidal, just want you to know that you're not alone. I know how incredibly difficult it can be to open up. You might feel embarrassed. You might feel like, oh, I shouldn't be feeling suicidal. My problems are so trivial, or they're not important, or I'm just being silly. Or you might feel like you're a burden to other people. You might feel guilty. You might feel remorseful. Anything that you're feeling, it's valid, and you're allowed to feel however you want to feel. But please know that you're not alone. I know a lot of my clients who don't want to open up to their family or their friends. I ask them this: if this was your mum, your friend, your sister, your brother, your dad, wouldn't you want to know about how they're feeling? So please reach out to Lifeline, talk to your friends, talk to your GP, a psychologist, a counsellor. There's so many different resources out there. So there's another resource called the Suicide Callback Service. If you're feeling suicidal, what they do is they call you, I guess, on a frequency that you both agree on. So they might call you every day to check on you. They might call you every week just to make sure you're okay. So it's a fantastic service. So it's 1-300-659-467. There's also a really cool app that I found, because I know that it's difficult to talk to someone on the phone about. So this is an app called the Reminder Safety Plan. So this is something that where you can input how you've been feeling. It can input your safety plan. You can have your support network on there. You can actually share your location if you're feeling suicidal. You can complete the K-10. So the K-10 is a psychometric test that we use to assess people's levels of depression and suicidality. You can also put your emergency numbers in there. I'll somehow share this on Instagram because it's really, really, I had downloaded it yesterday and it's amazing. It gives you ideas of what you can do when you feel like this. Mm. It asks you whether you want to reach out for support. It, you know, might say, hey, I noticed that you're feeling, you wrote that you're feeling really down. Do you want me to text so-and-so for you? So it's a really, really cool way to, you don't have to speak to anyone on the phone, but it's just a reminder of some things you can do to feel better and ways you can reach out for help if you are feeling suicidal.
Mm, definitely. And like Kat said, making a suicide safety plan can be really helpful if you are experiencing suicidal ideation. Mm. So a suicide safety plan can help to keep you safe when you're experiencing suicidal ideation. Your safety plan will remind you of reasons to live and connect you to the people and services who can help during these really distressing, tough times, and give you some perspective when you're feeling really low and helpless and like there's no hope. So find a time when you're feeling calm. It's helpful to collaborate with someone you trust, such as a close friend, a family member, or even your doctor or counselor. Can be really helpful in creating your safety plan. So it's a good idea to get these people involved as well, since you may need to call them during a time where you're really distressed. So it's important that they are aware of the best way that they can help keep you safe. So write your plan when you're well and thinking clear, and keep it in a place where you can easily look at it or find it. And the plan should be used to familiarize yourself with the types of situations, thoughts, and feelings that might help you when you're feeling like there might be warning signs, so that you can refer to it when you're detecting some of those warning signs and decide whether or not to activate your plan. So it might include a list of activities you can do to help calm down and comfort yourself when you're having suicidal ideation. You can create a list for yourself of the reasons you might want to live or might provide hope for you. Even things like, I know when we used to do Lifeline or even for clients, it can be something simple as your dog.
That's a huge protective factor.
Pets. Yeah, pets. So it can be really distressing, and it's easy to get caught up in the pain you're feeling and forget the really good things in your life. So this list can be a really helpful way to refocus your attention until the suicidal ideation passes. You can talk to the list of names and contact details you'll include on your plan as backups in case your first choice isn't available at that time. You can, you know, if you need professional assistance, you might have a list of professional resources available to you along with their contact details. You might make your environment safe. So this might involve removing or securing any items that you might have thought about hurting yourself with, or making a plan to end your life with.
Or asking someone to do that for you.
Yeah.
Or to do it with you. Hey, can you help me flush my, you know, medication down the toilet? Or, you know, can you help me get rid of
this knife? Yeah. What can you do if you're still not feeling safe? I would suggest keep the name and address of your nearest hospital emergency department or telephone crisis line available, and make a commitment. So the last step on your plan is to make a commitment to your safety. This means committing yourself that you will follow this plan when the need arises, and then committing aloud to someone else, like counselor, trusted friend, family member, whoever you ask to help collaborate this plan with is usually the one you might even put a signature down the bottom to say that you've made that commitment, that you will follow this plan when you need help. And we also, when I'm making up a safety plan with a client, I might also refer to it as a safety contract or something like that.
So it's an agreement that you need to keep you safe.
Yeah.
And please know that if you're feeling suicidal, it's nothing to be ashamed of, and it's nothing to feel embarrassed or feel like you shouldn't be feeling suicidal. I think that it is, as I said before, unfortunately quite a common feeling. I think it's really important though it's your responsibility to reach out for help, because unfortunately, as we said before, not everyone can read your mind, and you do need to start, you know, opening up if possible. And if that's, it can be a little bit uncomfortable, but it's imperative that if you are feeling like this, as much as you, that is uncomfortable, you need to push those feelings aside and reach out for some help, because that could be the person that really helps to save your life.
Definitely. So prevention. The best prevention is to treat the underlying cause of suicide. So if a person has major depressive disorder or is depressed, or if a person is abusing drugs and alcohol, treating the major depressive disorder or treating addiction to drugs and alcohol will help prevent that from progressing to the point of suicidal thinking. Medication along with support of a professional, a mental health care professional, has been shown to be the best methods of treatment. Not always medication, but definitely professional intervention is required. Recognizing the warning signs that we've mentioned and seeking help are the best methods of prevention. And number one is talking about it. So you can prevent suicide by being on the lookout for warning signs. And once you suspect that, hey, this person might really need some help and might be thinking about suicide, ask about it.
Because I think sometimes, even if it's difficult to talk about it, I mean, if you feel like, oh, I still can't do it, I don't want to say the wrong thing, I think just showing, you know, your concern is the most important thing in that situation. If you don't get the wording right, or you're not, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. But I think sometimes when we get referrals for people who are suicidal, it's a lot harder for people to open up to strangers, and it's a lot easier for people to open up to their friends sometimes. I'm not saying all the time. So you might be the person that they find the easiest and the most comfortable to talk to. So even though it's uncomfortable for you, as I said before, please push that aside and try and have that conversation with them, or ask a friend to come with you so you can both have that chat if you want some support as well, as long as they feel comfortable with that person as well.
Definitely. And your direct, non-judgmental questions can encourage them to share their thoughts and feelings, not only with you, but with a professional that will be able to help them. So regardless of their response, if you suspect that a person may be suicidal, get them help immediately.
And I know a few times I've had people who are suicidal come in with their support network. So if that's something that that person wants, they feel a bit worried to go alone, they might nominate you or somebody else to go along with them. And that just can help them feel a little bit more comfortable and not alone as well, because it is scary reaching out for help.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a couple of services, if you are thinking that you may be able to help someone, or even for yourself, Kat mentioned there's a suicide callback service, which is 1300 659 467. Obviously call 000 for urgent medical attention. There's Kids Helpline, which is 1-800-55-1800, and Lifeline, as I mentioned before, which is 13 11 14.
There's also Men's Line, which is really good for men. That is 1-300-78-9978. As Amy said, 000 is imperative if there's an emergency, but these might be good if it's, you know, maybe following a suicidal disclosure, or if you're feeling suicidal but you want someone to talk to and you don't really want to talk to your friends or family. This can be a really good start for you to open up to someone over the phone
and to add to your safety plan. So if you're someone that, like we've mentioned, sometimes suicide is in relation to not knowing where to go for help, so these can also be really good starters if you're not sure where to go. Call them for help.
It's not an easy conversation to have, but it's one that does need to be said. And I think the more that you talk about it with your friends, your family, your colleagues, the less taboo it gets and the more people might feel comfortable to open up. As Amy said, you do not need to be a professional to know this stuff at all. This is stuff that obviously we do a lot, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you can't do it too. I think just being there, being non-judgmental and being direct in your questioning, as Amy was saying, is the number one most important thing.
So if any of this has raised any, I guess, distressing feelings or emotions, please do seek some support and self-care. Know that this is a really heavy, serious topic. So if this is hitting close to home, please reach out and get some support. But also, we really just wanted to put this out there to help anyone that might have been experiencing suicidal ideation, or for anyone that isn't sure of how to help a friend. We hope this information has been helpful, at least just to get you started.
To think about it and to know that you're not alone.
Yeah, there's definitely.
There's so many people out there that can help. So yeah, look after yourself if this is something that you've been thinking about.
And we hope that this has been helpful.
Yeah. Alrighty guys, we will catch you next episode.
Thanks so much.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you love this episode or you know someone who might, we would love you to share this with them. If you want to see more, please follow us on our Instagram at The Psychology Sisters.
Please note the content shared in this episode is for educational and general informational purposes only and does not replace personalised advice and support from a mental health professional. See you next episode for more spicy science and sexy self-help.